Well, it's time now for our May edition of PMC Live. KFSK News and Petersburg Medical Center hold a monthly radio show focusing on different departments and news programs at the medical center. Can you hear me, Phil?
I can hear you just fine.
Awesome. Okay. So today I'm joined here in the studio by PMC's CEO, Phil Hofstetter, and we are also joined on the telephone by nurse manager Jennifer Briner. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you fine. It was a little bit hard to hear Phil.
Oh, guess why? His mic was off.
How's that? Is that better?
Okay, now we're all together. So there's a lot to talk about, I feel like, today. There was a work session yesterday between PMC and the borough, and we can talk about what's on the horizon for PMC. And then also Jennifer, the nursing program that just had 4 grads this last weekend. Where should we start? Does anybody need to go anywhere quickly, or?
I don't. I think it's great. Better to start with Jennifer and nursing, and it's nursing week, and I'd love for her to kind of talk about that. It's just such a great thing.
Yeah, Jennifer, we had a little news story on the graduation. I talked to one of the grads, and then there, you know, you can see the ceremony. If there's a video of it, you know, online, which is what I watched, but it's kind of a cool program. It's people can become nurses here in town, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We are so excited about this. This group that graduated is our second cohort to go through. So 2 years ago, we had 4 nurses graduate, and then now this year, we have the 4 that you did the story on. And yeah, we're super excited. We really believe in growing our own at our hospital, because we know that people who, you know, are feel like this community is their home, and they have family and friends, and you know, they're very connected, and we feel like those are some fantastic nurses, because they want to be here and they want to make a difference for the people who live around them. So yeah, we're thrilled that we can partner with University of Alaska. It's a great program, and we anticipate that it will continue for years and years. So we're really thrilled with that opportunity.
Now, when I was learning a little bit about the program, it sounds like there's nothing easy about it, but it might be convenient, because you're actually able to be at home. You don't have to go to some far-off college to do this.
Yes. Like, generally, before we were able to start this, you know, if you wanted to go to nursing school, you'd have to move somewhere else for 2 years. And so with this, even though it's a rigorous program, you can do it, you know, and still be at home. So if you are somebody with a family or a job here, you know, you don't have to give those things up and leave. So the students do have to travel just a bit. This year was unprecedented because of COVID. So they ended up doing a lot more virtual clinical experiences instead of traveling and going into other hospitals, because as you can imagine, most of the hospitals were shut down to students and different things like that during the first year of the pandemic. So our students did their primary clinicals here at Petersburg, and then did some virtual, and then went and spent a long week in Sitka at the Sitka Manajkum Hospital, which was great because they were able to kind of experience like some operating room, you know, an ER that's a little bit busier, an ICU, just kind of got to see that whole round of, you know, different areas in a little bit larger hospital. So, so they had a great time. They, you know, but they are becoming nurses with only leaving town for about 9 or 10 days.
So are these nurses going to be employed at PMC? Is that in theory, they could be a nurse anywhere, because they'll eventually be an RN after their board exam, right?
Correct, yes. But no, all 4 of them are actual current employees, and at this point they all anticipate staying and working with us, which we are just very grateful for and very excited for. So we had 2 nurses now that stayed, that are still working from our first cohort, and they're fantastic additions to our team, and we just are very confident that the 4 students that graduated last week will stay and just really keep that level of nursing super high in Petersburg.
Now, Jennifer, I didn't put this in my news story, but I learned that one of the grads was your daughter.
Yes, she was. Lauren Thane is my daughter.
So she must, she must have watched you. You must have been somebody that inspired her to take up that profession.
Well, I encouraged it her whole life, and she had different ideas to start with, but, she decided to move back to Petersburg and start a family and came to work as a CNA, and I think after the first day, she was like, I love this, and then wanted to go to nursing school. So that makes me happy.
Yeah, when I interviewed Kelly Bieber, when I interview people, generally, I can't put everything in the news story because you have this long interview and you have to have this short little news story to share with other radio stations in the state. But she mentioned some advice for other people, and it was, starting as a CNA is a great way to just see if that profession is for you, and then it's kind of a nice stepping stone she was talking about too.
It is, because a CNA, they do some of the best work in our hospital. They take care, they do all the provide for the basic needs of all of our patients and residents. And so as a CNA, you just get used to, touching people and caring for them. And so if you do that, then by the time you're a nurse, you don't have to learn all that. That's a natural thing for you. So all you're learning is the nursing piece instead of just like, how do I, bathe somebody or help them walk or, just the basic things that they do. And so it's a great way to see if you like nursing, because it's a really hard job. It's physically hard. It can be demanding. Sometimes the people that you're working with are not very cooperative. And so it's a big job, and they are kind of our unsung heroes. But if you hate being a CNA, and that's okay, because it's not work for everybody, you shouldn't become a nurse, because nurses do those same things as well. But if you love it, then you should definitely consider a career in nursing.
It seems like the type of job that would be just so broad, because you're working with the general public, and you're working with the general public. So that's like how many different personalities and types of people. And then each of those people that you're talking about, all these different illnesses and health issues. So it's the variables are like, it seems, could be huge.
Yes, it can be a lot. And, generally when we, like at the clinic and, in lab and places, a lot of that care is well person care. When they come into our hospital or into long-term care, that is, people are kind of can be sick or scared, and so we just see people kind of at a very stressed level, and sometimes, we're just, anyway, they have to have a lot of patience and try to meet people where they are, and we have a fantastic group of CNAs, and we've had a lot of our nurses that were CNAs and now have moved up through nursing, so it's a great way to grow in our organization and in our community.
Phil, did you want to jump in and add anything?
I always speak highly of, ever since I even interviewed here, when I first met Jennifer and, saw some of the nursing program and then actually read through some of the history, that's the part that really fascinates me. And it's such a draw here for Petersburg. And if you're from Petersburg, you may not know that in other parts, in other community, other rural facilities, that's such demand. It's so difficult to have local workforce and local programs and the continuity. We have had many programs in the state, but the continuity. I mean, we said two examples. We have Kelly Bieber, who's Don Bieber's daughter. Now, he's not a nurse, but works at PMC for many years. And then we have Jennifer and then her daughter. And there's many examples of that, And even I took pictures and at the point of dispensing for the vaccine clinics, and I was watching one of the RN students provide vaccines. And I have this photo of this superintendent, Erica, with permission, and she was like, well, she was my student in high school, and that means a lot, especially when we're dealing with something where there's so many unknowns. We're really they're going through school at that time during COVID, and to have that program here and then also to be part of the workforce going forward, it's just there's so many bullet points of positivity that gives me chills, you know, when you think about that. And can we emulate that with other disciplines and other professions? And there's so many possibilities here. It's something that's such a strength for Petersburg that, you know, showcasing that and talking about it, I think, is really important.
Yeah, it's almost unbelievable that you can have a nursing program in a town of, you know, just over 3,000 on an island with no roads, mm-hmm. that the technology is makes it possible where there can be these video lectures and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. You know, and again, everything is, you know, we did the best we could with what we had at the time. So coming out of this, you know, capitalizing on and maybe honing the things that really worked well for that kind of teaching, and then the things that maybe the in-person, obviously we want to make sure we still have that going forward as well. But, you know, but again, I can't say it enough with Jennifer's leadership in the nursing program and in the hospital, and how pivotal a role that plays in all aspects of care. It's really commendable. It's a commendable profession, and I'm so impressed and just honored to try to support you know, nursing staff and all staff.
All right. Well, anything you wanted to add, Jennifer, before we jump over and ask Phil questions about the meeting yesterday?
I guess the only thing I would just add is that, you know, today is the start of National Nurses Week, and it always is May 6th through the 12th. It ends on Florence Nightingale's birthday. And just, I just like to just commend all of the nurses who work in our organization. You know, they work in all sorts of areas, home health, the clinic, case management, long-term care, acute care. You know, we just have nurses in all these areas, and they're fantastic. They work really hard and always work to do what's best for our patients and residents and their families. So if you see a nurse this week, just give them a thank you.
Okay, I will. Thanks, Jennifer. So, Phil, let's talk about the work session with the borough. How did it go? What was your takeaway?
Yeah, it was... I felt like it was very productive. It was nice to have the meeting in the chambers with the board and the borough, and also using the technology with Zoom available for our staffing to chime in. It went fairly flawlessly from that perspective. It was, you know, I had two work sessions previously, so I had a pretty good picture and an idea of what we wanted to cover and talk with, because I was working with Bob Lynn, the liaison. We've met a number of times about that. And just so that we can structure the meeting so there's good content and that it's meaningful content, and that we had a few maybe action items to work on. And obviously the new facility was a big part of that. But also for me, it was important to sort of, you know, look at a presentation style for operations and financial picture and things that we do normally at our board meetings, but on a more a scale that was a lot bigger. So I went back to 2006 and I looked at a lot of data, looked at services that we provided and where we stand and what's changed, what's unpredictable, what's predictable, and what are some things that we've seen in COVID year, and then what does the future look like?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about some expansions. It seems like take home health, for example. From what I understand, there's a couple of reasons for expanding home health. One was just public interest. But the COVID year, I mean, I'm sure you've learned different things from the experience that PMC's had to go through.
Right. It's hard to say how you can appreciate this, but, you know, during the COVID year, there's a lot of times where we had to react extremely quickly, you know, respond to changes at CDC, our own changes within the state, our changes within the borough, and also within what's happening with COVID and locally. And so we're constantly in a flux of change and keeping up on the latest. You know, and one of those changes and the ability to respond is because, and that was one of the things I wanted to express to the boroughs as a really positive nature of a community hospital, is that we can respond to those changes very quickly, don't have to go up the ladder to some corporate entity, get permission, jump through a bunch of hoops to you know, and that seems like a small thing, but anyone that's worked for the federal government or any kind of a state agency, you it's very restrictive. I've worked in that environment many times. I tell my staff all the time I was the master of the workaround because I can try to get things done in an environment like that. But COVID year, what we're allowed to do is it was even more important to be able to respond quickly to things, take staff, and just get the job done and then figure things out later. And that was extremely important to be able to do that. And services was also the same. Home health services is an example of that. So because we couldn't allow people to come in to the facility as often as they needed, we had to figure out some way to deliver services. Otherwise, they're going to come in through our ER. Because we're an island, there's no place to go. If they can't get their care, prevention of care, they're going to end up coming into the ER. So we have to figure out something. And so the idea to expand home health was not that was a self-driven need. That was a demand that was occurring out there. And we just were able to act quickly and expand that need rapidly. And so we went from like a staffing of 2 to 2.5 to I believe 6 now. And, you know, the number of nurses, we have patient navigators, social work to help with, look at levels of care and look at navigating through all the complexities of resources that are available to patients. And then, helping patients navigate through that, deliver the care, and then responding to any needs and enrollment as well. And so there's a continuity of care that we're able to provide. And then, you know, they can either, sometimes they do better and then they discharge them. Or they may progress to need to go to long-term care, or they may be at the manor or senior living. You know, they're all over the community, and the idea is to deliver those services outside of the facility. And that's just exploded. The interesting thing about it also is that was a need before COVID at the last community cafe when we did the aging in place. That was a loud and clear takeaway from the community that they wanted. And we saw that come to fruition during the pandemic. And it's something I'm very proud that we're able to fulfill.
So that expansion of home health care to like half a dozen people being involved with it, is that something that you can kind of continue into the future past this COVID period?
Yeah, that's a good question. I believe it is for two reasons. One, I think the need is there. It was there before. It was always there. It was what we found was that those patients were not getting enrolled into home health because we didn't have the availability of staffing. And also they were fulfilling the need, what I would call a workaround, by going to the clinic and just getting seen. So they were getting their needs met, but it wasn't maybe as appropriate as home health enrollment. And so I don't think that's going to go away. I think that's now that we've met that need, we have the staffing, there's sort of this smaller economies of scale with growth that you're able to meet and grow the program. So I think we're beyond that point. We're able to grow the program.
Yeah, I would think there would be some things that might be more routine that you wouldn't necessarily have to go into the clinic for every time.
Yeah, I mean, there's very specific requirements. It's a CMS, it's highly regulated as many things in healthcare. And so there's, and I don't know all the enrollment regulations. I would ask our manager to come in and probably speak to that at some point in the future. But yeah, there are requirements to get enrolled, and there's also requirements that they can also get to the point where they can discharge them. And we also had COVID patients in that category. So patients that, you know, we were actually able to keep out of the hospital because home health stepped up and was able to deliver the care, look at supplies like oxygen and getting oxygen tanks to them, looking at, basic readings and vitals to make sure that they're not decompressing. And, you know, as we knew more about COVID and sort of the trigger points where somebody comes in, you know, home health was able to kind of look at those and evaluate that.
Yeah, I did hear from some patients actually who had oxygen, at home, even thermometers delivered if you didn't have one, instead of having these COVID positive patients going out into the community, they can kind of stay at home and get the health care there.
Yeah, and that was real important, not just in the recovery, but keeping them at home in their home. It's, you know, whether it's COVID or whether it's some other chronic illness or process, you know, there's a lot of studies out there that recovery and care is improved in the home.
All right. Now, to touch on where the PMC is at with a new facility, I mean, this is a kind of a longer term project. It's definitely not going to happen overnight. You know, where's that project at now?
That's always a challenging question. You know, so as a community hospital, we're always challenged with capital infrastructure funding, and before COVID especially, you know, the state and federal, they were not funding many of these things despite the deterioration of many, many projects in the state. Obviously, it's something that's been argued often. And so I certainly chose a challenging project because healthcare facilities are not, you know, not cheap. They're very expensive. And the longer you delay those, they just get the costs tend to just drive up. So looking at it from, you know, my perspective has always been just let's just move the project forward. You know, you have to move the project forward. We need a facility. Regardless of many, many different aspects and variables, we need to do basic things to move the project along. And those can be done in increments. There's no reason why we couldn't be, you know, otherwise we're just sort of wasting time. And what'll happen is, beyond the life of the facility, there's sort of a catastrophic point or a crisis point. And our board member Marlene brought that up, you know, last night. It's just that you don't want to get to that point where you're then have a major facility catastrophic incident where we can't keep residents in the facility. You know, that would be really a crisis moment for Petersburg Medical Center. And so to avoid that, it's just keeping the project moving forward is really important. And, you know, the price tag with it is very expensive. It doesn't mean that we can't get creative and look at, sizing, you know, different kinds of, you know, occupancy ratings maybe for different services and doing those things. The important thing for steps for us after the master plan was completed last January is to evaluate the different sites, do the environmental and geotech studies, and you know, basically looking at utilities and sewer and water capabilities, muskeg that makes a building here very, very prohibitive, and evaluating maybe honing the five sites down to three, and then choosing one of those sites as the site, and then once we can do that, we can get the site prepared, and what they call shovel ready. And shovel ready is basically putting a full pad down, hookups, utility hookups, ready to go for construction. And there's certainly a cost amount to that, but it's not, you know, it's a phase. So it's obviously a lot less of a cost than the whole big picture. And so moving it in incrementally like that, you know, when I talk to funders, they want to see things. They want to see community buy-in. Along with that, with a community hospital, they want to see assembly buy-in as well and collaboration. And then, obviously moving a project forward and not being held up by, debate, you know, moving forward with a single initiative, a unified message, selecting a site, getting it shovel ready, and then moving the project along from that standpoint, and then going to funders, you know, and those funders could be federal and state, those could be foundations, they could be grantees, that could be the USDA, you know, direct loan processes, a number of them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about what you see as a possible funding pie, because I know you have had experience in Nome with kind of getting a new facility going there, and probably every place would have a different, you know, pie of where their funding sources would be coming from, and then what's the, you know, political climate at the time and state, federal dollars, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned this on here just for clarification. I wasn't involved in getting the funding into Nome. I was living it. You know, yeah. I lived it as a as a manager, I lived it as a as an administrator as well, and I had to move the the whole hospital from one hospital to another, staffing wise, and there was a lot of challenges, and there's a lot of experiences learned with that. But basically, the story is Denali Commission helped. You know, obviously they had more funding in the 90s and the early 2000s. But they really helped projects move along in getting them in completion or funded the majority of completion. In the Nome case, it was funding the foundation and that site for shovel readiness. And, you know, the first round of funding for the state, I believe Barrow was able to get the funding that 1 year. And then 2008 came along with the ARRA funding, which was the recession. And then there was a revitalization funding, infrastructure funding. Not unsimilar to what's occurring now. And that's where, because the project was shovel ready, they were able to obtain, you know, the full funding for that project.
Now, you mentioned community buy-in as being important. So it sounds like the Petersburg Borough, you need their support. Their support would be required.
Yes, yes. I mean, if you're not unified in the support, even if there's no funding available, I can't move a support document forward to a potential funder without support. So it's a little bit of a cart and a horse kind of concept. But if we don't have unified support, I can't actually approach any potential funders. You know, that's the first thing they ask. I have had meetings in the past year with USDA and Denali Commission. I had a group meeting actually to discuss a lot of these elements. And so that's what funders are looking for. Rasmussen also, I have had conversations on maybe some potential funding. And, you know, a lot of funders, they would love to support things, but it needs to have sort of this capital campaign project. I think that's one of the action items that I got out of the meeting last night, is really putting a binder together that looks at, like, what is our capital campaign, you know, funding project look like, you know, and what are our steps to do that, and put it in some binder to hand to either the community members or the borough or funders in a document.
Yeah, from what I understand, there's some support on, say, borough assembly, and then there's some folks who are worried about the size of the project, and but it sounds like there's some wiggle room there.
You know, it's I think one of the things that we need to do, we had the master plan, which is really a high level view. It answers a lot of questions like structural analysis, structural engineering. It looked at seismic. It looked at you know, the financial aspect, debt capacity. It looked at the space programming to a different level. And the original design was on a first floor. And so, like, for example, if we go on the next phase, you would want full design, full architectural design. And that really, that focuses on the master plan and looking at things of, all right, let's really get down to the space programming. Can we improve that? Can we look at maybe making it two-story? Because it was a one-story structure. Originally, the idea was to spread it out, but the problem with that is that to prepare that site is actually very, very expensive. So the easiest thing to do is make it into a two-story structure. And so, you know, things like that would then come to fruition on that next phase.
I see. Okay. Well, is there anything else that we should touch on that we're missing on today's show?
I don't think so. I appreciate the time as usual, and we always have something great to talk about.
I agree. Jennifer, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Awesome. Thanks for hanging with us while we were talking about that. Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I just, yeah, thank you for your work, and and happy Nurses Week to all those nurses out there who are both working and retired. So,
to you too, Jennifer.
All right, thank you.
So this wraps up PMC Live. Thanks to our guests, Phil Hofstetter and Jennifer Briner. If you missed some of the show, you can find it later. It'll be posted on our website, kfsk.org. PMC Live airs the first Thursday each month at 12:30.